Welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh, a place to chow down on topics relevant to writers of all kinds.
Hello, and welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh. I'm Marissa. And this is a weekly podcast in which I talk about a wide variety of writing-related topics. And sometimes I discuss a topic that isn't specifically a writing-related topic because a lot of people, including writers, might find a way to relate it to what they do and how they live. And sometimes I do it because there's a lot of stuff going on in the world, and as a result, I'm watching the news too much. And I really can't think about much else, which has been the case a few times over the past year, if that's kind of putting it mildly. And I don't see that ending anytime soon, unfortunately. If you listened to my episode last week on the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, you probably know I talked a lot about certain current events that you're probably tired of hearing about. And the reason I did that isn't so much because I'm a news junkie, although, I can admit it, I do have a bit of a problem in that regard. Rather, it was because I wanted to give you an idea of what the First Amendment covers, and what it doesn't cover, and how it's often misunderstood. I'm going to talk more about the First Amendment this week, and next week too, because I feel it's something that writers of all kinds, and artists in general, need to know about. But I'm going to move the discussion away this week from current political events and focus on areas that I think it would benefit you to know about in relation to your own work. But first, just to quickly recap, the First Amendment says that, quote, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. End quote. I explained last week that Congress is generally interpreted as state or local government, as well as federal, and it could also include schools, maybe police departments, that type of thing. And I emphasize that the First Amendment doesn't refer to private businesses, who are generally free to place limitations on forms of speech that they may find objectionable. And private businesses can also make decisions like deciding not to publish a writer's book based on their opinion of the writer. That type of decision is not speech-based, contrary to what you might hear, since it's not seeking to stop publication of the book. It's more like the publishing company is just choosing not to be the one who publishes it. A private company imposing such limitations may face consumer backlashes, but any claims that those types of decisions involve First Amendment censorship are usually untrue. I also clarified that we do not have the freedom to say literally anything under the First Amendment, and I used incitement to riot and fighting words as examples of types of speech that are not protected. But as it turns out, there are a few more, and it's important to know about them. An article on hg.org, which I'm including a link to in the notes for this episode, titled What Type of Speech is Not Protected by the First Amendment, states that, quote, the lay opinion often views the degree of protection afforded by the United States Constitution as much broader than it is in reality, end quote. So, a lot of people think free speech protections are absolute, but that's wrong. And a writer who's not cognizant of this not only runs the risk of offending someone, but can actually damage someone's reputation. As a result, writers who violate these First Amendment limitations may face stiff penalties, including reputational damage, lawsuits, that type of thing. So, One type of speech that all types of writers working in all forms of media need to know is not protected under the First Amendment is defamation, which Diffin.com defines as, quote, the communication of a false statement that harms the reputation of an individual, business, or group, end quote. There are two general categories of defamation that you may have heard about. Slander, which Diffin.com describes as defamation that is, quote, fleeting, mostly verbal, end quote. Whereas libel consists of defamation in printed form. And by printed, I'm talking about traditional printing on paper, or dead tree, if you prefer to call it that, or online. But it can also refer to photos and audiovisual materials. Basically, what seems to distinguish the two is that slander, being largely spoken, is more transitory, whereas libel can be recorded in a publishable form and thus can be considered longer lasting. Therefore, what a plaintiff, who is basically somebody who brings a lawsuit, needs to prove for slander will be somewhat different than what they'd need to prove for libel. However, these two types of defamation are very similar, and it's easy to confuse them. I'll admit, I've done it a few times even after I learned about both of them. According to laws.com, four elements are needed for either type of defamation suit. One, there must be a defamatory statement. Two, that defamatory statement must be published to a third party. Three, the speaker knew or should have known that the false statement was false. And four, that false statement needs to cause injury, which can be physical or it can be monetary, mental, any type of injury. That's a pretty broad category, but it must cause injury to the subject of the communication. It's important to note before we go on further that even though the elements that need to be proven are pretty much the same across the board, the amount of evidence needed to prove any of them may differ depending on who brings the lawsuit. In general, the standard of proof required tends to be higher for public figures, such as a politician or an entertainer, than it is for private figures, such as, say, your next-door neighbor or the checkout clerk at the grocery store. In an article called Public Figures and Officials, Gary Boo explains that courts have traditionally held private individuals who are generally seen as not placing themselves, quote, in the public eye, end quote, to a lower standard of proof than public figures, who voluntarily sought some degree of fame or notoriety. Within this group, there are subgroups, such as all-purpose and limited-purpose public figures. But for now, I think the main thing to remember is that public figures can include government officials or entertainers, and that they generally put themselves into the public eye. The rationale goes something like this. If you're voluntarily seeking any type of recognition, you're going to expose yourself to more people. And I mean that in a figurative sense, although there are some who do so literally. I'm not going to comment on that. And therefore, by exposing yourself to more people, you increase the number of people who won't like you and or things that you do. As a result, it's really only fair that you should expect to receive some criticism and possibly even become the butt of a few jokes here and there. You don't have to be happy about it, but that's the price you pay for voluntarily seeking some type of fame. And that's especially true if the defamatory statements that are made about you are actually true. An article by Tony Rogers called Here Are the Basics of Libel Laws for Journalists states that, quote, libel is by definition false. Anything that is provably true cannot be libelous, end quote. Now, this is not to say that a writer should necessarily say things about a person just because they're true, as I will explain further in a few minutes. But truth is a defense against libel. That's an important point that I wanted to make. So, to prove libel, a public figure generally needs to prove that a defamatory statement was made with what's known as actual malice. As established in the landmark 1964 U.S. Supreme Court case, New York Times versus Sullivan, actual malice means that something was said, quote, with knowledge that it was false or with reckless disregard of whether it was false or not, end quote. This case specifically centered around an Alabama law enforcement official who sued the New York Times for printing a full-page ad that criticized Alabama police for their treatment of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. According to the majority opinion, written by Justice William Brennan, quote, debate on public issues should be uninhibited, robust, and wide open, and may well include vehement, caustic, and sometimes unpleasantly sharp attacks on government and public officials. End quote. However, it's easy to see how this type of standard can be extended to public figures who aren't government officials, such as entertainers and prominent tabloid figures. Going back to the satire episode I did last May, which I'd recommend that you check out if you haven't already, what would Saturday Night Live look like if a relatively high standard like actual malice didn't have to be proven? And as a result, the cast members were too afraid to write jokes and skits about, oh, I don't know, Britney Spears maybe, or the Kardashians? I don't regularly watch SNL, and I'm not up on the celebs du jour, so maybe I'm a little dated with my references there. But again, it's kind of ludicrous for a high-profile entertainer who seemingly seeks out the spotlight, if given the chance, to expect their privacy to be respected if, say, they leave their house, which is often surrounded by paparazzi, in a short skirt and forget to put on underwear or something like that. The same goes for TV shows like Family Guy or Robot Chicken. For some reason, I had an episode of American Dad in which the wife, Francine, obsessed over her hatred of George Clooney stuck in my head when I was putting this episode together. What I'm trying to say here is, think of how much less material writers for these shows would have to work with if celebrities were off limits. And that's not to say that we should write about celebrities just so we'll have more material. Just that if the standard of proof was lower, writers would likely feel a term that I'm sure you've heard before, a chilling effect. And some of them would be afraid to express themselves to the extent that they'd like to. Still, remember that just because a public figure can expect a limited right to privacy in many circumstances, doesn't mean that they're not entitled to privacy at all. For example, say you frequently write satirical comedy skits about an actor who has a squeaky clean reputation. Say he's never done any drugs, he doesn't even drink, and maybe he's really smug about it and you just want to smack him every time you see him on TV, something like that. But then he's in a car accident. He survives, but he's injured pretty badly. So he's in therapy for months. A few years later, it's somehow leaked to the media that he's checked himself into rehab because he became addicted to painkillers that he took as part of his treatment. Let's say he and his publicist didn't tell the media that he was checking himself into rehab, but a paparazzo saw him checking in, or maybe saw him walking around the facility, I don't know, and somehow found out more. Now, ideally, HIPAA is supposed to protect against something like that happening, but you know what they say, shit happens. So, because he's a public figure who's taken a public stance against drugs in the past, Should you write a snarky comedy skit about him to portray him as a hypocrite? I'm not sure your doing so would meet a court standard for actual malice. It might, but I'm not sure. But regardless of whether or not it would, I would find a skit like that malicious and in poor taste, and I would have a problem with you as a writer. Specifically, I would think you're evil, and I would never want anything to do with you ever again. Now, again, the standard of proof is lower for private figures. They won't need to prove actual malice to sue you for libel. All they need to prove is negligence, which, according to Latinot in A Quick Guide to Libel Law, quote, means that the publisher didn't do his homework. Even if the publisher didn't know that his facts were false when he published them, he can still be on the hook for libel if he should have known. End quote. So, to make up another example, say you hate your next door neighbor and you want to write an angry blog post about her. Maybe you had some kind of confrontation in your driveway or in front of your house that morning, and you just want to get it out on your blog, and oh, I don't know. You decide to describe this neighbor, and you mention that she's had bad plastic surgery, but you've never bothered to find out whether she's actually had plastic surgery or if that's what she actually looks like. And it turns out that she never has had plastic surgery. If you end up doing that, putting something like that on your blog, you should probably look for a lawyer, like, right now. And don't think that you won't get in trouble if you change her name. Even if you do, if you describe her in such a way that she might be recognizable to your readers, she can still accuse you of defamation and stand a good chance of prevailing in her lawsuit against you. So, I'll end my discussion of libel by recommending that you keep this idea of what the First Amendment allows and doesn't allow in mind when you write. And I would say this about just about anything. Use good judgment. If you're writing about a famous person, even if it's a satirical piece, I would actually say especially if it's a satirical piece, have a good reason for it. Are you doing so to make a statement about a policy or a social practice that you'd like to see changed? If so, you can probably get away with more than if you're writing a scathing piece on him or her out of intense dislike. And if your muse is a private individual, by all means, proceed with the utmost caution. Better yet, make a character up. If you want them to have one or two qualities that an individual you know in real life has that maybe a lot of other people might have, that might be okay. But you probably shouldn't do more than that. I'll say it again. The First Amendment protects a lot of speech so that we can have open, energetic debates, in theory anyway, and express ourselves in uniquely creative ways. But I have to say this again, it's not absolute. And even if it's not a First Amendment issue, writing about real people can have harsh consequences. Even writing about a real person in a good light can give the impression that your subject endorsed your piece, and that could get you into trouble too. I won't get into that here, but hopefully you get the idea. You can say a lot, but there are limits. And when you think about it, that's really the way a civil society is supposed to work. So, I'm going to do one more episode next week on a First Amendment related topic. I'm not going to say what. I do know what it's going to be, and I'm going to try to make it a good one, but I don't like to give out ideas of what I'm going to do my next episode on ahead of time. That's just me. But until next time, please let me know what you think. Email me at marissadelefarfalle@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at @marissad13. And on Instagram at www.instagram.com/marissadf. Also, please check out my Patreon page at www.patreon.com/marissadf. I put up 2 patron-only episodes up there this month that you'll have access to for a pledge of $3 per month. And if you pledge $1 a month, I'll personally thank you in an upcoming episode. Actually, for $3 a month, I'll also mention your name as a thank you. So for $3 a month, you get a thank you and access to 2 bonus episodes. I would also really appreciate it if you can take a moment to rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, as it'll help a lot more people find out about the show. So, thanks for listening, and for all of your support. All of your feedback and kind words really mean a lot to me, and encourage me to look for ways to help you grow and find out what your possibilities are as a writer, and to make the show better. I don't know if this topic is as interesting for writers as it might be for lawyers, but since this is stuff you should know about, I really hope I'm making it as interesting as possible. And I do hope you learn a little more about it on your own, because again, it is stuff that you should know. But anyway, stay safe and peace out.
This podcast has been brought to you by Anchor, which is the easiest way to make a podcast. Go to anchor.fm for more info.